Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is IBM System C9 Integrated Information Processor Assisted IPsec Migrating Workloads and Performance Improvement. Today's presenter is Jeannie Christopher. Jeannie is an advisory software engineer and performance analyst in the COS Communication Server Development Organization. In her current role, she is responsible for developing new ways to improve COS communication server performance for key COS workloads. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Jeannie.
Thank you, and good morning, everyone. My presentation this morning is Z9 Integrated Information Processor Assisted IPsec, which is a lot of words, so from now on, when I talk about it, I'm going to say ZIP instead of the big, long way of saying it. You can move to the next page. What I'm going to go over today is I'm going to do a quick IPsec overview, very, very high-level overview of what IPsec is and briefly about how it works, what Z-Series specialty engines there are, what they're called, and what their primary uses are, very high-level overview of Z-Series cryptographic hardware, brief description of what a ZIP-assisted IPsec actually is and how to configure it for ZOS comm server, way of projecting what ZIP requirements you might need for particular workloads, if you just a brief way of doing some capacity planning, and then some sample performance measurements. We'll look at the differences between ZIPs and not having ZIPs for certain workloads between R9 and R10. Next page, please.
Thanks for your information. We are currently moving on to slide number 3.
So to start, I'll talk about a very high-level overview of what IPsec is. It's an open network layer security protocol endorsed by the IETF. By the network layer, they mean that the encryption is actually done at the IP layer instead of doing it up at the transport layer, for example. And it does authentication, integrity, and data privacy using these IPsec security protocols, and a couple examples of those are authentication header, or AH, and EST, encapsulating security protocol. It secures traffic between any two IP resources using something called security associations. You can do the management of the crypto keys and security associations either manually or using automated key management protocol called IKE. We have a number of presentations that talk entirely about IPsec, so if any of you are interested in those, I can definitely hook you up with those. So I'm not going to go into too much detail about IPsec here. Do you want to move to slide 4? We'll continue. Basically, the big idea that we need to get across for the purposes of today's presentation is that IPsec can provide end-to-end network encryption from host to host and not just having the IPsec encryption in the network. And it's becoming more pervasive due to regulatory guidelines and also for companies that share part of their network with other business partners. All right, you can move to slide 5. The way that you configure IPsec in ZOS is I use this thing called IP packet filtering. Basically, what you do is you set up these filters at the IP layer that say whether or not you want that kind of traffic to go in or out, depending on the rules that you set up. Some of the rules that you can set up can say, I only want certain traffic that has this IP address or port or protocol, or if you only want inbound traffic to be blocked or permitted, those kind of things you can use. It's pretty granular how you decide that whether or not you want packets to be permitted at the IP layer. And that's a whole other topic to talk about how you actually set up these rules. But that for the purposes of this, what you need to know is that if you want to use ZIP-assisted IPsec, what you need to do is set up your rules to use permit with IPsec action, and that'll control what traffic is using IPsec. You can move to slide 6 now. And this slide is just an example. There's an APAR that we took for an enterprise extender where there were a bunch of performance issues with using IP packet filtering and enterprise extender. And if you're going to be using ZIP, or even if you're using IP packet filtering for enterprise extender, you might want to apply PK37839. If you look at the interactive workload CPU consumption, you can see that we do a heck of a lot better with IP filtering once you have that APAR on. Same thing with transaction rate relative to no IP filtering. it's pretty flat if you have the APAR on, but it was, the transaction rate was significantly worse if you did not have the APAR on. So that'd be one that I would recommend that you apply. You can move to slide 7 now. In addition to IPsec, there's another way that you can do security between hosts, and one is called ATTLS. And the way that I differentiate between ATTLS and IPsec in my mind is IPsec is done at the IP layer, and ATTLS is done at the TCP layer. It's called TLS, Transport Layer Security, and it's also defined by the IETF. And it's done as a socket service, and ATTLS can be also done at the TCP layer without actually changing anything in application. So you can either do it as a socket service in an application, or you can do it transparently using ATTLS. It uses something called SSL handshakes between two TCP applications to negotiate the security between them. Currently, we don't have ZIP assistance for ATTLS. I know there's a requirement open. That's the first question that I get every time I present this. But it's still under investigation at this point. You can move to slide 8 now. The ZIP Integration Information Processor, or ZIP, isn't the only specialty engine. It's just the only one that we're explaining at this time. There are a couple others, the Integrated Facility for Linux, or the IFL. That's something that you can use to provide additional capacity for Linux workloads without affecting IBM software charges. And then there's also the ZAP, which pretty much does the same thing, but more for web-based applications like Java or XML. The one that we use for ZOS Comm Server is the ZIP, and what that does is it also provides ability for lower costs for select data and transaction workloads, processing workloads. The main exploiters right now are DB2D, DRDA. It does that. It exploits the ZIP for portions of their workload, not all of their workloads. Same with Comm Server. We're exploiting the ZIP just for our IPsec workloads at this time. All right, you can move to slide 9. I'll talk very briefly about different kinds of cryptographic hardware. There's something called a crypto coprocessor, which is available on the previous generations of Z-Series. It's a general CPU with built-in crypto functions, and it provides the hardware and encryption and decryption. If you want to use that, the unit of work that you're exploiting for this must be running on that particular processor. Another thing that we have are the crypto cards, and those are available on Z990, Z9, and Z10. There are a couple different kinds, the PCIX cryptographic card or the PCIXCC, and the Crypto Express 2 card, CEX2C. They provide the hardware RSA signature generation verification for peer authentication during EIC negotiations. And then there's a third way that you can exploit cryptographic hardware is over instructions. There's a suite of these available on Z990, Z9, and Z10, providing the CP assist for cryptographic function, or CPACF, and providing hardware encryption, decryption, and authentication. And again, the unit of work, or for this, the unit of work can be running on any general CPU. It doesn't have to be on a particular processor. You can move to slide 10 now. So what exactly is ZIP-assisted IPsec? So even with the specialized crypto hardware, IPsec encryption and decryption and authentication can incur very heavy CPU consumption. And we have to check the filtering at every single packet to decide whether or not it'll be permitted or denied. And it's going to add overhead just by sheer virtue of what it is. The thing about ZIP-assisted IPsec is it'll allow for the movement of the bulk of the IPsec processing to move from the general CPUs to ZIPs. The rule for how we decided to move this is all the SRB mode IPsec protocol traffic is now directed to ZIPs, which means that encryption, decryption, message authentication, and IPsec header processing have been moved to the ZIP, and the work's assigned to an independent WLM enclave so that it gets appropriate WLM classing. It'll help provide the CPU busy relief on general CPUs for customers already running IPsec on ZOS. So the idea is that if you're already running it and you see degradation using IPsec, it'll help with that. It also makes the IPsec deployment more attractive for customers concerned about it. If you're thinking about doing IPsec but you're worried about additional CPU consumption, this can definitely lighten that load a little bit if you're going to exploit a zip for this. IBM doesn't impose software charges for zip capacity. It doesn't actually replace CPACF. It just performs those instructions on the zip rather than on a general CP. You can move to slide 11 now. The configuration for communication server zip-assisted IPsec is actually pretty easy. In the TCPIP profile, you just need to add this new global config zip IP security keywords, I guess. There's also a harmlib number, IEA optxx, that you can use to control whether or not zip-eligible IPsec workload can deliver to general CPs if it exceeds the capacity for the zip. And that parameter is the IIP honor priority equals yes. If you want stuff to be able to spill over to the general CPs if the zip needs help, you want to code yes, and that's the default and what we would also recommend. If you code no, that means that all the zip-eligible work is going to be performed on the zips, whether or not the zips are at capacity. And it can result in throughput or response time degradation if the zips are being heavily used. It could be a reasonable trade-off in some environments where minimizing usage of general CPs is important. It would depend on your environment whether or not that would be optimal for you. There are a couple APARs that you're required. It's in base V1R9, VOS1.9, but if you're going to go back to 1.8, you need PK40178 and OA20045 to be able to get the zip support from COM server and then the Harmlib member support. You can move to slide 12. So configuring communication server for IP assisted SEC continued. You want to make sure that you classify the new IPsec independent enclave differently from the TCP IP address space. What the problem that you have is IPsec SRBs may have longer execution times than other workloads directed to the zips, and running those SRPs at high priorities can lead to significant processor delays for other work scheduled in the zip. If you're using zips exclusively for IPsec, if you forget to classify that WLM independent enclave, it defaults to being in the sysother class, which is, I think, one of the lowest priorities of WLM class that you can have. So any of the work, IPsec work that spills over from the zip onto general CP is going to be running at that lowest priority, which is probably not what you want. Slide 13, please. Displaying zip usage, you can tell whether or not your IPv4 or IPv6 traffic is using the zips if you do a netstats command. There's a inbound packets handled by zip and outbound packets handled by zip. If those numbers are increasing, you better be using a zip. Next slide, 14, please. Displaying zip availability, you can do the DM equals CPU command, and if you see this plus I under the processor status, that indicates that zip is online. Slide 15. This is just a high-level potential benefit chart of zip-assisted IPsec for an interactive workload. Basically, what we're demonstrating here is that if you don't have IPsec at all your CPU consumption is going to be done on your general CP. If you have IPsec and no zip, all your CPU consumption and IPsec processing is going to be done on a general CP. But if you're using IPsec and zip, all your TCP IP processing and only a portion of your IPsec processing are going to be done on general CPs, and a portion of your IPsec processing is going to be done on the zip processor. So it will help you out a little bit. Move to slide 16, please. This is a potential benefit of zip-assisted IPsec inbound bulk chart here. Same thing, CPU consumption is all going to be done on general CPs if you don't have IPsec. And everything's done on general CPs if you have IPsec and no zip. But if you have a zip and you're running IPsec, you can move actually all of your IPsec processing over to the zip for an inbound bulk workload. Slide 17, please. Again, this is a similar chart just for outbound bulk data processing. If you look, again, you know, general CPs for IPsec, no IPsec, or you're getting all that processing is going to be on general CPs. If you have IPsec and a zip, a very large portion of that IPsec processing can be moved over to the zips. Slide 18. So I'm going to talk a little bit about how you can project your zip requirements and how you can determine how much of your existing or future relic load is eligible to actually move to a zip processor, and talk a little bit about how many you would need to handle the existing or future IPsec workload, and then how much CPU busy release can you expect on your standard CPUs. There are a couple different methods that you can use to do this. If you're already running IPsec, you can use Project CPU function in ZOS Workload Manager, and I'm going to talk about that. And if you're not running IPsec yet, you might need to do some traffic modeling, and IBM Washington System Center has some guidelines for that, and there's a white paper at the end of this presentation that will walk you through some of that. Page 19. So I'm going to talk about Project CPU, since that's the one that is the easiest to use. If you want to use Project CPU to get an idea for the capacity that you can have on the zip, pretty easy. All you have to do is code project CPU equals yes in your IEA opt XX timeline member. And then, of course, code the global config zip IP security in your TCP IP profile. And then just run your IPsec workload and collect RMF workload activity report during that interval. If you move to slide 20. So what you're looking at here is we're interested in the workload activity report for the IPsec CL class service class, since IPsec traffic that can be processed on available zip processors will run in the WLM service class. So if you look at the IIP, that is NA, since in this case, now that the first time that you ran this bulk data workload and you didn't have a zip on it, since there's not a zip configured, that's why the IIP shows NA. If you look at IIPCP, where it says 105.17, that's the percentage of the CPU time used by zip-eligible work running on general CPUs. And this workload would saturate a single zip with at least 5% spilling over to the general CPUs. So that's what that particular thing means there. And then where it says CP and 105.17. So what that means is the two CPUs are each averaging 105.17 divided by 2, or 52.59% busy handling that IIP workload. On a CPU activity report, each of the two standard CPUs are averaging 56.88 busy. Normalizing to the capacity of a single standard CPU, this becomes about 113.76%. Therefore, the percentage of CPU time that was not zip eligible in this benchmark is 113.76 minus 105.17 equals 8.59%. So basically, if two zips were added to this configuration, approximately 92% of the CPU consumption for this IP workload would move to zip. And if you move to slide 21, that's pretty much just describing what I just went over, describing slide 20, if you want to go back and look at that later. You can move to slide 22. So this is an example of an RMF report for bulk data, and if you had one zip in the network. So it's the exact same workload, same bulk data workload, but at this point you have a zip configured in your network. If you look at the IIP indicator, it should say 95.13. The zip is 95.13 busy handling this IP workload. The remaining 4.87 of single zip capacity is uncaptured time. The ZOS-based functions such as interrupting, handling, dispatching, et cetera. The IIPCP 7.78, that's the percentage of CPU time used by zip-eligible work running on general CPUs. Previous analysis indicated about a 5% spillover. The extra 2% is attributed to uncaptured time. And then CP 7.78, the two CPUs are each averaging 7.78 divided by 2, or 3.89, busy handling this workload. Previous analysis indicated the two CPUs averaging about 52.59% busy. With each single zip configured, the IPsec CL-related CPU utilization dropped by over 48 percentage points on each of the general CPUs. And the IPsec CL-related work remaining on the standard CPUs here is work that spilled over from the single zip. So you can move to slide 24. So I'm going to go over some performance measurements, and as with any time that you talk about performance measurements, we do have disclaimer. It always collected using a dedicated system environment, so the results obtained in other configurations or operating system environments may vary. Could be different when you know what other people are running in the same in different environments that might affect the results. The benchmarks used in the presentation were obtained using AWM for ZOS. And if you want to read more about AWM, there's a website listed there. All CPU consumption measurements are for networking CPU. That refers to the CPU used in the TCP/IP stack, Unix system services, and MBS. iOS scheduling and dispatcher cycles involved in networking flows. That typically contributes to about 8% of overall CPU for interactive workloads and about 30% for bulk workloads. All the measurements collected were on a Z10 model 2097-752 LPARs with two dedicated general CPs and 0 to 1, depending on whether or not there was a zip for that particular chart. ZIPs running per LPAR using communication servers V1R10. The IPsec configuration used triple DES encryption with SHA authentication, and V1R10, we have additional optimizations that aren't related to ZIP for V1R10 in IPsec versus V1R9. And the ZIP-assisted IPsec provides TCP flow control changes for bulk data transfers. So if you move to slide 25, this first chart talks about the interactive workload measurements. Basically, what it's saying here is that if you look at the general CPU consumption for NOAP IPsec for 10 concurrent interactive sessions of sending and receiving 100 bytes, of course, the general CPU consumption is going to be lower than if you're running IPsec. But if you look at its worst point at V1R9, we improved it just with R10 IPsec enhancements, and then you can further improve the general CPU consumption by adding, on top of R10, by adding a ZIP. And again, the throughput's still the best if you don't have IPsec, but we made significant improvements in V1R10 to improve the throughput with IPsec, and then you get about even benefit if you also have a ZIP on top of that with regards to throughput. Slide 26, please. So this is a normalized interactive workload measurement. The IPsec impacts the CPU consumption based on that 8% networking cost. So this chart just shows that for interactive traffic, you're enabling IPsec results in a 5% increase in CPU per transaction when using ZIPs on R10. Slide 27, please. Here's a similar chart for inbound bulk workload measurements. The workload that was done here is 5 concurrent streaming sessions sending one byte and receiving 20 megabytes. With no IPsec, the CPU consumption is still the best. But if you look at the difference between V1R9 and V1R10 running an IPsec workload, we made significant improvements just with R10. And then if you look at the jump between just R10 and then going to R10 plus a ZIP, we made very, very significant improvements in the general CPU consumption for this workload. Same with the raw throughput. If you're not running IPsec, now if you're running IPsec with a ZIP, you're going to get pretty close to what you would have throughput-wise without a ZIP and without IPsec. All right, you can move to slide 28. The outbound bulk workload measurements, the difference here is we have the same 5 concurrent streaming sessions, but we are sending 20 megabytes and receiving 1 byte. So, again, if you look at the difference between not having IPsec at all and then having IPsec in V1R9, quite a jump in CPU consumption. Look at the improvements for R10, and then if you add R10 plus a ZIP, again, we are able to improve general CPU consumption quite a bit, both with R10 and then adding ZIP on top of R10. And throughput's the same. If you look now, we're approaching with IPsec plus a ZIP what you could get throughput-wise without having IPsec at all. 29. And this is just a normalized bulk workload measurement, just a different view of the same information. It shows the impact to CPU consumption based on the 30% networking costs. So for inbound, if you enable IPsec, it results in a 4% increase in CPU per megabyte when using Zipson V1R10. So that's not terrible. And then for outbound transfers, enabling IPsec results in a 14% increase in CPU per megabyte when using Zipson V1R10. Slide 30. And this is a quick summary. You can use IPsec with Zip Assistance to potentially reduce CPU for your IPsec workloads. And then, as I promised you earlier, there's a capacity planning for Zip-assisted IPsec white paper that would have additional information for trying to figure out what you might need in terms of usage of your Zip processors. That's it.
Thank you, Jeannie, for a great presentation. At this point, Jennifer, we would like to open the lines for questions.
Now we'll take our first question from Carol Stinson with Wachovia. Has anybody complained or have you done any benchmarking on the impact to VTAM? Because I know the Zip-assisted IPsec helps a lot with TCP/IP, but in the benchmarking I've done, I did see an increase in net. Has anybody complained about that?
I have not heard any complaints about it, but, again, I don't think that we've done any specific analysis of VTAM using this. That's something that I can definitely look into.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
And at this time, we have no other telephone questions.
At this time, we will conclude the presentation.